Yes, welcome back to another huge episode of Matt Chats. Looking forward to this one. We have a huge guest coming on later in the show, but we do have a huge guest that's going to kick us off as well. We do have the big dog of, I guess, footy internationally, if we want to go that far, but certainly around the WA region. He's the king of the footy yarn, and he's also known as the king of cowl occasionally. Seb Clark, welcome. How are you, mate?
G'day, Matty. Great to be with you, mate. Very kind words from you.
Oh, look, it's been a long time coming. You haven't ever been on the Match House podcast, but we've finally made room for you.
I reckon I've featured on a quiz.
Oh, you were on a quiz. You were on a quiz.
I got absolutely belted in a quiz, and I never came back.
To be fair, I don't think you put a good representation of yourself out that day. You're better than that, I think.
That might have been the first day I ever sort of conversated with you as well, Matty. It might have been the first sort of exchange that we had. I guess the proper ones, we've talked previously to that. I didn't just come on your podcast and stuff like that, but definitely one of the first exchanges we had professionally, most certainly.
Yeah, I thought this bloke's gonna know his footy, and he just got chopped up in the clears, and I thought this bloke's enough here.
Probably fair back then, and probably still fair today.
Now it's been a big day of footy, mate. Obviously Ben Rutt and Al Clarkson's all been happening. How have you seen it all? Are you happy that Al Clarkson's now at North Melbourne?
Well, yeah, I was lucky enough to be on air as that news broke, so I was probably one of the first to broadcast it. So if you want to call it an exclusive after Sebastian Clark, feel free to do so. crazy news. I wasn't too sure probably Tuesday or Wednesday when we heard about Ben Rutten. And, you know, I know Clarko loves a big Melbourne club. We all know that. So I thought maybe he might just backflip on Kangas there. And I never feel sorry for footy clubs ever at all because, you know, these are guys that are getting paid big money to make the big decisions, and also they get the privilege to work within a professional sporting club, so I never feel sorry for him. But if Clarko did go and do a backflip on North, I would have felt sorry for him there, so I am a little bit happy for him. We know they're a rabble at the moment, but with Clarko there, if he can't sort it out, I don't think anyone can. So I am pretty happy for that. I don't feel sorry for Essendon at all. They've created their own issues in my eyes. So, looking forward to seeing how it goes for North in the next couple of years.
Is there any way now that, obviously, Essendon have gone about it so late to try and get rid of Ben Rutten and get Clarko in, is there any way possible now that Ben Rutten is the coach of Essendon next year?
It's just, it can't happen. I mean, it's like when someone's in a relationship, a couple are in a relationship, and maybe the girl's gone after an AFL footy player when he's looked at her in a nightclub or something like that, and then she's tried to go with him. The boyfriend's right there, seen it, and then try to have a happy relationship. The other guy says no to the chick. So I know it's a strange sort of likeliness to this sort of situation, but that's what it feels like. And I don't think, as a boyfriend, you can forgive in that sort of thing. Dance if I'm Ben Rutten, if you can understand what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, like the way you've gone about it there.
Yeah.
Now, if they are to get rid of Ben Rutten, which it seems imminent it will happen, where do you think they're going to go? Because there's a rumour going on at the moment that Jay Turd, he could be back.
It can't happen. That's another thing. That just tore the footy club apart. I'm not saying it was all James Hurd's fault, because it wasn't, but that just can't happen with the scrutiny that he was under at the Bombers. It just will not happen. You know who I'd like to see them go after? Someone like Ken Hinckley. Now, he's at my club, okay, and I understand that. I don't think he's going to get us any further than what he has. I'm appreciating him for all the hard work he did, but in 2013 he came in. We were a rabble in 2011, 2012. We were just nowhere near it financially and on the field. We were lucky that there were two expansion clubs in the years of those years, because we would have been dead last if not. But and we were actually beaten by those clubs too, embarrassingly, back then. So Ken Hinckley came in, he set the standards, and that's what I think Essendon lack at the moment. It's just their standards. They're just nowhere where they need to be for a professional club, you know. And the team I speak of just then, Port Adelaide, gave them a good spanking and showed that they're just absolutely nowhere near it. And I don't think it is a skill issue. I think it's not a culture issue, maybe just a standards issue. They don't have any at the moment.
Well, if Ken Hinckley's looking after Ken Hinckley, it wouldn't be a bad option for him, would it?
It wouldn't be a bad option. So, you know, if I'm Essendon, I'm probably just knocking on his door.
Also, as we know, mate, you're a big Port fan, and I've been getting messages from you over the last couple of days. The Port players are firing up. They're firing shots at the Adelaide Crows players ahead of this showdown. That actually doesn't mean too much, but all of a sudden there's a lot on it, and you said, we're going to lose. They've put the mocker on us already.
Oh, mate, I couldn't believe it. We've spoken about this before, Matthew, about getting a little bit more theatre around games of footy, because everyone goes in, they'll be playing a team like North Melbourne, and they say, yeah, nah, they're a real high-quality team. When No, they're not. What are you talking about? So be honest, be up front. So I'm glad the boys did it, but, you know, we see what happened with Ed Langdon and Collingwood. It comes back to bite, yeah. But it does add some spice. I wouldn't be surprised if we got knocked off, but do I really care at this stage of the season? No.
Fair enough. Where do you sit on the prison bars? Are you angry about it? Do you actually care?
Oh, I don't. It's gotten to the point where I don't really care. You know, I understand we've got history, as any club does. I know we agreed to come in as the Port Adelaide Power. Totally understand that. I don't want to wear the prison bars every round of footy. Not at all. I want to maybe just be able to pay respects in a heritage round. They're talking about making it happen on a showdown basis. I don't really agree with that. I think, you know, we should reintroduce the heritage round, give everyone the opportunity to celebrate their heritage, to go about it in the right way, and we should be able to wear them then. But apart from that, you know, I'm not too concerned, to be fair.
Look, as a Collingwood fan, I don't care. I couldn't care less, to be honest. So, look, if they want to wear it, let them wear it.
Yeah, it just wouldn't make sense to have two teams in black and white stripes. Sorry,
that's true.
The AFL, where they're coming from. And I love our majorly teal. I reckon teal's a really good colour.
Yeah.
And if we use it right, I reckon it looks elite. Why are we fighting over black and white? It's the two most boring colours ever. No disrespect to Collingwood.
Oh, I agree.
It's not an amazing colour or anything going on, you know, so, yeah.
Port love wearing their grey clash strip.
Yeah, why is that? Why are we wearing that? I don't know. There's no teal at all in that. Why the AFL ever approved that, I'm not too sure. So, yeah, that's my take on that.
Yeah, fair enough. Now, I want to go through a few niche stats, mate. So I've been on AFL tables, and I've gone through a few different stats, and I just want to see if you can nail any of these, because they're pretty tough. But if you can nail a couple of them, I'll be impressed. So starting off with most handballs for the season, I've got the top three here. Who do you think, from 1 to 3, has the most handballs for the season, player-wise?
Is Zach Merritt up there?
He's not.
Really?
Not in the top three.
Wow. Tom Mitchell would have to be.
No, he's not there either.
Are you kidding me? Alright, well, give me Took Miller.
Took Miller is not there.
Wow, okay, who's that a lot of... Andrew Brayshaw.
No.
What? Lucky Neal.
No.
What? Alright, you're going to have to tell me, I have no clue. Right.
In third place on 356 handballs is Sam Walsh.
Yeah, okay, all right, yep.
Second place, I thought you might have got this one. This guy gets cops it a little bit for not getting metres gained, and this is Rory right. Laird, 360 handballs.
Yeah, okay, right.
And the top one, Clayton Oliver, was 371 handballs.
Oh, that's, yeah, no, I should have got that. The other two, yeah, you see, iffy, but wow, yeah, okay. No, good one, matey. Making me look like a fool now.
Now, these other ones, you might struggle with these ones as well. So, most hit-outs of the season, who do you think is the top three in that one, and how many?
Well, Gorn's missed some footy. Darcy's been good, but I think he's also missed some footy. Give me Witts. Is he in the top three?
Witts is number one.
Oh, okay, lovely. All right, good. Give me Darcy in the top three.
He's third.
Is it Max Gorn in second?
It is not. The second one actually surprised me a bit.
Okay, all right, give me a second. Would it be Darcy Cameron? Probably hasn't played enough there. Wouldn't be anyone from Port, that's for sure. Jeez, you're going to have to tell me, mate.
He missed a bit of footy during this season. They dropped him a couple of times, but Riley O'Brien.
Rob!
Yeah.
Yeah, he did pop in my mind, but I thought, yeah, no, because he's missed too much footy, no way.
So Sean Darcy, 597, Riley O'Brien, 688, and Jared Witts with a whopping 805.
Jesus, yeah, right, okay, that's about right.
Right, we've got three more categories here, so we'll go to kicks. So who do you think's got the most kicks for the season? Top three.
Zach Merritt?
No.
Rory Ladd?
No.
Oh, wouldn't be Petrarca?
No.
Oh, my.
These wouldn't be the names I would go with either, to be honest, the ones that are the top three.
Are any of them Backman?
Yes.
Saad?
Saad, you said? No, not Saad.
Someone from Essen. Oh, no, Jack Sinclair?
Jack Sinclair is second.
The other two defenders as well?
Yeah, I'd call them both defenders, yep.
Wow, okay. Nick Hind?
No.
Darcy Moore?
No, no.
Nah, that was silly. Nah, you're going to have to give it to Matty.
So Sinclair in second, he's on 408. In third is Sam Doherty on 401.
What am I doing?
And in first, Jaden Short with 412.
Jaden Short surprises me. Yeah, no, I thought Sinclair would have had him.
Yeah, I would be agreeing with you. We have two more here. Do you want most bounces first or goal assists?
Bounces, give me bounces.
All right, bounces. So I've got the top five here for bounces.
Yep, all right. Saad's in there.
Saad's number one.
Yeah, he's just by a long way. Daniel Rioli's in there.
He is.
Number two?
Number five.
Oh, okay. Sinclair?
No.
Oh, no. My goodness. They're all defenders, aren't they?
One's more a midfielder.
Laird?
No.
Winger. Maybe a winger. Maybe a Eddie Langdon?
Not quite. That's a good guess, so I don't mind that.
Nah, you're going to have to give it to me, Matty.
All right, so in first, with 111 bounces, was Adam Saad.
I saw this trick. Did you say Ahmed Saad?
I did mention the garage man by mistake. In fifth, was Dan Rioli, who's 31. In fourth, this one surprised me, Ed Richards, 32.
Oh, I saw him during the week, and yeah, that did surprise me.
Second was Nick Hind with 56.
Oh, I should have got that.
And in third, Shy Bolton, 36.
Oh, I did see all of that. I'm filthy with myself. All right, goal assist.
Goal assist.
Tommy Hawkins is at one.
He is at one with 26.
Trike is at two.
Eagle first with 26. Ooh.
Okay.
And then you got one more to peel off, which is the tough one. I was surprised by this one.
Oh, jeepers. Which club?
The Suns.
Not Took Miller?
No.
Noah Anderson?
No.
Ooh. Oh, Ainsworth.
Correct, Ainsworth.
Bang!
So, Hawkins, Petrarca, 26, and Ben Ainsworth with 24.
Was surprised by that as well. Yeah, no.
So some strange stats in there, but we'll have a quick look at the games before we let you go, Seb, because it's a pretty big round of footy. Melbourne and Brisbane tonight. Who are you tipping there?
Tonight, it's tough to go past Lions at home. They're way too good there. The D's are good, and I give them credit where credit's due, but I just think, you know, at home they're just going to be too hard. The Mighty Lions, and when they get rolling at home, it's pretty hard to stop them, apart from when they're in finals. So, them to lock up a top four spot for me.
Giants and Dockers.
Giants and Dockers, a lot on the line for Dockers. You can't really go past them. Giants have been extremely underwhelming this year.
And then we get into a super Saturday footy with North taking on the Suns.
Let's just go with Gold Coast. I don't think North. Alistair Clarkson, yes, the atmosphere of Clarkson's there, but it's not going to get him over the line here.
The Cats and the Eagles.
The Cats and the Eagles. Cats by 80+.
Essendon and Richmond.
Has to be Richmond.
Yep. And your boys taking on the Crows.
I think my boys will just get it done. It's Robbie Gray's 200 last game. If we made those comments and it was just any old showdown, we'd lose. But because it's Robbie Gray's last game, I think we just have to get it done for him.
Any chance he gets a sixth showdown medal?
They'll be looking for him, obviously, and I think the Crows will be aware of that, so maybe not.
Yeah. This one's a bit interesting. Hawthorn and the Bulldogs in Tassie.
Well, I don't think the Bulldogs have beaten them in Tassie since something like 2008. So it will be quite a hoodoo to break for them. We know Hawthorn went through some better errors there down there, but I think they break it this week because there's just too much in line for Dogs. A final spot's up for grabs.
The big one between Carlton and Collingwood at the G.
I've toed and froed all week. It's obviously $1.92 at the bookies, but I think Carlton, they'll just have to find something and get into that top eight. I can't imagine them being in the top eight all year and then dropping out.
It would be heartbreaking for them, wouldn't it?
It hasn't happened for 40 years or something like that. I was actually surprised it happened at all because of how, you know,
difficult it would be to happen.
How difficult that is to happen. So 40 years, I'm surprised that it's even been 40 years. So, yeah, I think the Blues, they should just get it done.
And finally, St Kilda, they can still make it. If they win by 90, Carlton wins by 50, and the Dogs go down, can St Kilda do it?
There's still a chance, and Boops will be all over that stat. So I think the Swans will be... They've been really impressive, especially in the last 6 weeks or so. They've got a really good record from what I heard as well. So I think they'll want to carry that into the finals. And I guess, you know, they have been, I was told, they've been like a bit of a Stephen Bradbury falling into that top two spot. And that person's quite right. So, I think they'll win this one and lock up that top two spot.
Very good, very good. Now, before we let you go now, me and you hit up the casino last weekend just to watch a bit of footy. Now, I was thinking about hitting it up there again tonight. Now, when we sort of go and have a bit of a play on the tables, we're very team-orientated. We like to get everyone involved.
And buy-in. Just buy-in is all we ask.
You need everyone to buy in. Now,
literally on the table and both into the team morally.
I agree. Now, it's fair to say you didn't have your best night. I had a pretty good night, and I'm thinking, do I double down tonight? Do I go again, or is it a silly idea?
Well, Matthew, I'm in town, so are we just repeating what happened last week? Maybe. I don't know. I am at the Camfield as well, so this could work quite nicely. So, obviously, I went $50. No, I went $26 down because I actually spent some chips on some property.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
So, only $24 down, which is a pretty good night. Payday was yesterday. Bring your paychecks, punters. Let's go gambling.
All right. So, if you're around the casino, Simpsons, go all in.
Buy in. We need to bring the energy. We also need to find a good dealer because it's important they buy in as well.
Oh, if the deal is not involved, you might as well not even be there.
You might as well just give your paycheck to charity because that's...
All right, so it's been a pleasure having you on, mate, and hopefully we'll get you back on that quiz soon so you can redeem yourself.
Yeah, I really do. Good on you, Matty. Appreciate your time, mate.
Well, let's jump into it, Stephen. We have a massive guest that's joining the potty today. I'm a big fan of his. I know you are as well, and we all love him over here in WA. He opens the batting for Queensland, 26 first-class matches, 29 catches, 5 centuries, 5 half centuries, 1 crucial wicket, a high score of 143, and it's Bryce Street. Welcome to the show, mate. How are you?
Yeah, thanks, Matt. Thanks, Stephen, for having me. Yeah, good to be on here, boys.
Now, tell us, mate, you started your cricket over in...
You're born in Gosford on the Central Coast in New South Wales.
So. I was, yes. So, yeah, unfortunately, I'm a blue bagger by birth, but my parents thankfully made the right decision and got me north of the border. But, so grew up on the sunny coast and played all my junior cricket up there. And then... I came down to Brisbane when I started playing senior cricket and, been down here since then.
So would it have been about that sort of 2015-16 sort of time frame when you got the rookie contract with the Bulls? Is that around the sort of time that you went up, or when did you make the transition or the move from Gosford?
From Gosford.
Yeah, so from Gosford, you know, and then... You know,
oh, no, I came up... what year did I come up? 2004?
So a long time, well before.
Yeah, a long time ago. So 2004 onwards, did all my schooling on the Sunshine Coast and then moved down. Oh, well, I played cricket in Brisbane from 2012 or 2013, I think it was. and then moved down to Brisbane in 2016 once I finished school.
Was cricket always the sport for you growing up? Was it number one on the priority list, or was there something else creeping in the background, or was it always cricket?
I mean, there was I've tried a bunch of other sports. I mean, Mum wouldn't let me play contact sports, so that ruled out a few pretty quickly. But then, obviously, I don't think she realised how dangerous cricket can be at times, so that was maybe a poor decision in hindsight. But no, so what sport? I was in athletics for a little while, not that I was ever a standout in that, and then played touch footy. What else? I played volleyball for a couple of years at school, but no, really, cricket, I found cricket at probably 7 or 8, and after a couple of years, I fell completely in love with it.
Who were the ones that you loved growing up? Who were your heroes? Who'd you look up to?
So the first international series I can remember watching would have been the 05-06 Ashes, where Australia swept England 5-0. So then obviously grew up loving Hayden and Lang at the top of the order, Hussey in the middle order. Obviously I'd already played cricket a little bit, and I was like, I love batting at that point. So yeah, pretty much all of that entire Australian top order was like posters on my wall. So yeah, and then probably the older I got, the more I came to love Huss. That was probably the one that stood out for me through my childhood.
In terms of those heroes, have you tried to model yourself on any of them particularly, or how have you sort of found your style? Because it is a unique way you go about it.
Yeah, that's an interesting question, actually. So, I mean, I think you'd be crazy if you weren't ever looking at, like, your hero's techniques. And, I look at it differently now, whereas, like, obviously, when you're a young kid, like, you just want to try and bat like someone. But obviously, now being at a more professional level, I kind of go back and watch and kind of analyze their techniques a bit more seriously and take away things that I think would benefit my game. So even now, yeah, another one whose technique I probably dug deep into and had a real good look at was Sir Alistair Cook, the great man himself, another left-handed opening batsman. And I've really, like, probably from, like, my high school years, I really watched a lot of him bat, and I would say I modelled myself a lot on how he went about his batting and how he went about his cricket. So, I mean, yeah, I definitely still go back and watch my old heroes every now and again and see what's there for me. And then obviously sometimes I just like to sit and just watch them for the pure enjoyment of it as well.
Now, one of the things I most enjoy about watching you bat is your ability to bat for long periods of time. What is your mindset when you're batting in long-form cricket? Is it resetting after every ball, or is it just looking to survive and pounce on as many of the bad balls as possible, or is it something else?
Oh, I mean, it's something I've trained myself to do over a long time. I mean, it started pretty early. So, like, when I was younger, I played a lot of junior cricket, like, up in age groups. So I would be, like, I'll be 12 years old playing, like, under 15s or under 16s or stuff like that. So obviously playing against bigger kids and older kids, like, I wasn't going to be able to, like, bash the ball around everywhere because I quite simply wasn't as strong as they were or as athletic as they were. So then I just learned to be patient and just, like, wait for them to bowl badly. And then that kind of mindset kind of grew once I got into men's cricket. And then it probably did me a massive favour because I'd kind of already learned at that point how I had to be patient to build an innings. And then obviously as you get older and your skill set and your strength starts growing and getting better, then obviously you can keep the same attitude, but then the shots come easier and you can hit more balls for four and you can all of a sudden start putting pressure back on the bowler as well. So I guess I've always tried to find the right balance. And yeah, it is pretty process driven. Like, as you said, it is pretty much just I kind of have the same game plan especially in long format cricket, the same game plan every ball, and then it's just a case of rinsing and repeating that ball in and ball out and not getting bored or distracted from that plan itself. I think that's how I've best found my groove for batting long periods of time so far in Shield cricket.
Now, you went over and played some cricket in England over the winter for Frinton-on-Sea in the East Anglia Premier League. How did you find that, and were there any notable names you got to play with as well?
I know Peter Hatzoglou was playing for Sawston and Brabourne, who I didn't get to play against, unfortunately, because I got over there late and then had to come home early. And then I ran into a few people. So obviously the pros tend to do a bit of traveling around different teams and different competitions. So I met a couple of guys who played first class cricket in the West Indies bits and pieces. And then a couple of guys from South Africa, and you meet some, I guess it's always fun to meet some new and different people and share experiences and talk about what their cricket journeys are like and what their setups are like back home, because it's some aspects of it that you don't really see when you're just in one country and in one setup constantly. So I guess it's always nice to learn a few things and share information and get a different perspective on stuff like that. But in terms of first class players that were in my setup in my league, I didn't really come across that many.
And how was the experience for you in terms of, I guess, the different conditions? Is it something that you'll hold instead when you come back and play for Queensland? And what are some of the things you learned going over there?
I've always spoken about going and playing in foreign conditions as one of the things I love, because it's just such a different challenge. Right, English people talk about how different Aussie conditions are, and obviously Aussies talk about how different English conditions are. But I don't think how big the gap is can be easily put. Like the first couple of games that I was over there, I felt so out of my depth just because it's so alien. And then literally first game I went over there, I got my pad blown off by the Duke ball because of how much it swings. And then I remembered walking off with a second ball duck in the first over of this game, and I've gone, that's right, I'm not in Australia anymore. I've got to actually go about this differently. And all of a sudden, in the next couple of weeks, I had to totally rearrange my game and set up differently and plan differently and think about what different areas I was going to score in. And that, in that terms of that adaptation and analysis of how you're going to succeed over here, I think is what's more critical to becoming a good player. Because obviously in a game, you have to adapt on the fly, and being able to make those mid-game decisions quickly and fast enough to not be caught out when plans change is what's crucial to succeeding. So I guess being able to put that into practice over a long span of time in 8 weeks of playing cricket over there is a really good practice as well.
So given that you're now back in Australia and you'd be prepping for, for the Shield season to come, have you had any hits since you've been back, and have you noticed that you go, oh, hold on a tick, I'm actually batting I'm in the UK instead of I'm batting back at home? Have you found yourself, caught yourself doing that?
Yep, absolutely. I've had two hits since I got back. And obviously I'm coming back to T20 cricket and white ball stuff early on in the season here. But yeah, a couple of times I was batting and I'm like, oh, right, now I'm not in the UK anymore. I've got to start getting back into my Aussie habits. Yeah. But then at the same time, there's also a lot of stuff I learnt about that I learnt that improved my batting. So now it's about how do I best mesh what I learnt over there back with my Aussie skills.
Mm, absolutely.
It'll probably take 1 or 2 weeks of proper fine-tuning to kind of get everything and bring out the best product and best result. But that's part and parcel of it. You just got to try different stuff until it works and then see what spits out at the end.
Now, has opening the batting been basically your position for most of your career growing up? You said you had to play up a couple of grades and learn how to really defend and wait for the bad ball. Did that put you in a position to open the batting from a really young age and then and continue it as you've grown?
Yeah, I just did it because no one else wanted to do it.
It's always the way.
Yep. And then, like, at the end of the day, I remember, I was a bit of an impatient youngster. So sitting around and waiting to bat wasn't exactly a high priority on my list. So I was like, you know what? I'm just going to get out there straight away and do it instead. And then, hilariously enough, that actually made me want to not be getting out early and then having to sit and watch everyone else bat after me. So I was like, now I quickly realized that the longer I batted for, the less I had to sit around and do nothing. So that worked quite well.
Now, in terms of opening the batting, there's someone you're always out there with. Is there someone at the moment that you are a big fan of opening the batting with, or you have a favourite person you like to open the batting with at the moment?
Oh, I've got to be careful who I say here. I could get myself off some Christmas card lists very quickly. No, obviously, I mean, I've probably got two favourites that come to mind at the moment in terms of opening partners. I mean, first and foremost, my current Queensland opening partner, Joe Burns. I mean, like, obviously, he's a much older and much more experienced player, and he's been around first-class cricket for a long time. So I guess to have a bit more of an older head at the other end batting all the time and being able to pick his mind and not even, like, have to ask the questions, sometimes he'll just talk about it. And, like, having that viewpoint of experience for me is great. Amazing at the moment, and I've been pretty lucky to have that for the first few years of my career. And then secondly, and I mean, he's not opening the batting at the moment, but I hope to see him back there sometime soon in the not too distant future, is Matt Renshaw. I mean, I think he's someone that I get along with very well off the field as well, so we've always kind of gelled on the field when we bat as well. And I don't know. Like, I played, I remember I opened the batting with him at 19s. That would have been 8 years, 7 or 8 years ago. And that was really the first time that we played, like, high-level cricket together, and we kind of bonded during that time, and it's kind of stuck around since then. So, yeah, I hope we can restart that opening partnership sometime in the future, hopefully.
There's a couple of great shouts there. A couple of, yeah, guys who played Test cricket as well. So absolutely, like, a wealth of knowledge for you to draw on there. I'm also wondering if, so, like, I've, you know, doing a bit of reading up on you before we had our chat today, and in a couple of articles you're self-described as a stats nerd. So, like, you know, enoughy is enoughy. these sorts of blokes, like the Renshaws and the Burns, are they, I'd reckon Renshaw's probably enoughy, but is Burns maybe a closet enoughy? Like, these sorts of guys, you're all sort of sticking together?
I mean, I feel like any batsman at first class level is going to be some kind of a nuffy, whether they like to admit it or not. They probably have a driving passion for the game underlying in there somewhere. It's just about whether they're okay with admitting it or not. Because obviously there's a certain stigma that comes of being a nuffy that has a negative connotation sometimes in cricket. But I mean, yes, I would categorise them both as being nuffies. Like, they love talking about it, love speaking about it. Like, we're sitting at dinner and all of a sudden cricket will come across the dinner table as a conversation. It doesn't help when Marnus is there as well, because then it just doesn't get stopped. But, no, I guess having a top order unit that always is happy to talk about it regardless of what time it is or what setting you're in, I guess, has been very helpful to me. But then also having a group that's able to, like, consciously switch off from it sometimes as well.
Yeah, that's a fair shout. You'd need to know when to turn off.
Well, I mean, at the end of the day, like, we may all be badgers, but we all say there's more to it than cricket in life. So there's definitely time and a place where, like, it's put to the side and we're concentrating, like, we're talking about other things away from the field. So, yeah, like, I guess, and, like, these guys tend to know the borders of it pretty well. So, yeah.
Yeah, fair shout. Well, just wondering about being a stats nerd, where do you think that Where do you think that comes from? Like, was that your parenting? Was it schooling? Was, you know, just the love of the game and wanting to be a student of the game? How did that come about for you? Because I think there are a lot of, like, self included, absolute nuffies for the game, and I think there's a lot of different paths to get there. So how was your sort of path to earning that badge of honour of being a nuffie?
I mean, I probably, my first early two passions in my life were, on the field I had cricket, and then off the field I had numbers and mathematics. And then stats is obviously just the dream combination of the two. So my love of stats kind of stemmed from my off-field passions as well. And then not necessarily because I found I've took a more interest in stats because, I mean, I think I would describe myself as a very analytically thinking person. I very ones and zeros sometimes. So then being able to look at stats kind of put things into perspective for me when I was thinking about answers to questions. And then obviously I've continued my passion off the field for numbers. So I study business at the moment. So I'm majoring in accounting. So I've been able to put that into practice away from the field, but then also am still able to use it on the field as well. And even talking about like white ball cricket as well, like it's come in very much handy there. So obviously the game is going down a bit of a numbers drive at the moment in short format cricket in one day as in T20. So I guess having a passion for that kind of sector, I mean, has helped me think about the game analytically in that sense as well.
Now, let's talk a bit about your bowling, just the single first-class wicket with best figures of 1 for 19. Can you walk us through that wicket, and do you feel like you should be throwing the ball a little bit more often?
So to answer your question, the second question, should I be throwing the ball? By my bowling performances from last season in Shield cricket, probably not. I mean, at the end of the day, I haven't bowled that well in Shield cricket to date. I get more nervous bowling than I do batting for some reason. I don't know why. But yeah, every time I get the ball in my hand, I go to absolute water. And then like Uzi came back and faced me in grade cricket one day. He's like, why can't you bowl like this for me at the Gabba? I was like, that's a good question. I don't have the answer to. The one state wicket. So we had our – unfortunately, we were supposed to play Tassie at Ian Healy Oval on an absolute green minefield. And then a COVID case popped up in Brisbane, and Tassie ensuingly flew back home for fear of the borders closing, and our game got rescheduled to the highway that is known as Karen Rolton Oval. And at a kindly, what would it have been? I reckon 4 for 460 in the 150th over, out of a sheer move of desperation, I got thrown the ball, and the boys were like, oh, actually, it might be reversing a bit for you if you're lucky. And I thought that was a bit generous because I was like, I don't probably bowl quick enough to get the ball to reverse, and I haven't bowled with a reversing ball in a long time. And then, yeah, lo and behold, first one actually did something that didn't go dead straight. So I was like, oh, okay, that's a promising start. And then, yeah, just bowled a ball that he tried to hit for 12 over the wicket. Can't say I blame him. My bowling is a bit like that sometimes. And then, yeah, ended up in Joe Burns' hands at mid-wicket. And the hilarious part was that, there's two parts to this. So I only had my batting shoes on. So Uzi's like, oh, have you got your bowling boots on by any chance? I was like, no, but I can get them on for you. And he's like, yeah, okay, now would be a good time. So I've run off to put my bowling shoes on. And anyway, I'm doing them up on the sidelines, and I've got head coach Wade Seckham sitting next to me. And he's looked at me, and he's like, are you putting your bowling boots on? And I'm like, yes. And he's like, we are in serious trouble. Aren't we? Yes, we are. Well, and then I got on the field. And so I was bowling a couple of warm-up balls to Michael Nessa, and I've gone, I'm not going to lie, Ness, I don't know why, but I am crapping my pants right now. And he's gone, don't worry, mate, you're going to get us a wicket here. It's a sure thing. And then I turned around to him, two or three balls, and I was like, how the hell did you know that? He's like, I really didn't, to be honest with you, but that's okay.
Take it.
Legend.
Now, from there, mate, you obviously went on to play some cricket for Australia A against England and notched up a ton. Are you hoping to break back into that Aussie A squad, and is the ultimate goal to play for Australia?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, from a personal standpoint, it was disappointing to miss out on the tour to Sri Lanka with the A squad. But at the end of the day, if you don't like the decision, make more runs. It's as simple as that. I mean, when I got the phone call from Bailey, that was pretty much the conversation that ensued. And at the end of the day, yeah, I didn't put the performances on the board. I look back, I think I only averaged maybe 20 in Shield cricket after the Christmas break. Like, if you're pushing towards higher honours and selections, that's not going to cut it, simply put, no matter how well you did in the previous game. So, yeah, I mean, I only had myself to blame in that respect, and I've spent most of the winter thinking about that, and that's kind of been my motivating factor going forward now. So I want to be able to put myself back into the selection fold, and I've got to put the performances on the board that are going to get me recognised again.
Was the feedback that you got from George Bailey just as simple as, you know, we know what you can do, we just need you to go and score some more runs? Was it anything sort of more in-depth than that, or how was that feedback given?
I mean, I don't know how much I'm actually allowed to go into this conversation.
Fair enough.
At the end of the day, I proved that I was able to perform at that level against England A, but the recent form I had put on the board meant that selection wasn't going to happen. So then it's just fate is in my own hands from this point onwards, and now I've just got to give myself the best opportunity to be back there.
Fair shout.
Fair enough. Well, we got a couple of sort of, I guess, quick fire questions we call, Stephen.
Yeah, sure.
We're just going to go through just to finish off. So what about the toughest bowler you've faced?
Ooh, Nathan Lyon.
All right, yeah, nice. Favourite ground to play at?
I love the MCG, the one game I played there, but also now officially Allan Border Field after winning the Shield title there.
Nice.
And it's newly renovated. Looks pretty schmick too.
Go-to pump-up song or artist?
I don't have a song, but artist would be Eminem.
Yep, ooh. Yep, nice. Do you delve into a bit of PlayStation cricket? And if you do, have you ever played as yourself?
Yes and yes.
Appreciate the honesty.
And the laughter from my girlfriend says it all at this point.
Have you given yourself a few overs on the PlayStation as well?
No, I actually haven't. I don't think I've even got an option to bowl in the game.
Oh, no.
No, I don't blame him. Can't say I do. But yeah. And I've gotten to the point where I didn't like my character's ratings enough, so I went into a new career and started him again to get a rating.
Nice, I write that. What about your best sledge or funniest thing you've heard on a cricket field?
Oh, there's too many to name. I'm trying to think about anything that comes to mind. Give me 2 minutes and I'll get back to you on that one. All What's right. the next question?
The other one is biggest influence, so I guess coach or mentor.
Oh, I mean, biggest influence. Jesus, that's tough. I mean, my dad coached me for, I think, like 12 years of my cricketing career. So, I mean, in terms of, like, him and the time that he sacrificed to help me get to where I am now, he would work full-time, come home, and then go straight to the nets with me. And he changed his working hours purposely to fit in around what times I needed to be home from school and training. So, in terms of the sacrifice that he put in to get me to where I am now, probably my father. So, yeah, shout out to him.
Yeah, very good call. That's pretty much all we've got for you, unless you've got a couple Steve.
I've got a couple, if you've still got a couple of moments, Bryce. I've seen on your Instagram you're pretty keen on golf. Are you any good? What's your handicap? How are you hitting them?
I mean, I'm a bit rusty at the moment. I went through a period where I played a fair bit. I got down to about 9 or 10 handicap.
That's pretty reasonable.
So it's reasonable, but at the moment, I'd be asking for about probably 12 or 13, maybe a few more as well. I had a couple of rounds while I was in England, and I took the helmet off and raised the bat for one of them. So
not ideal.
Yeah, the second one was much improved, thankfully. But yeah, you could imagine my fear and disgust when the guys asked me what my handicap was, and then proceeded to break 100.
Aside from cricket, then, or actually, well, is cricket your favourite sport? Surely it is. If it's,
yes,
not,
it is.
Yeah. So outside of cricket, what's your favourite sport? Is it golf?
Basketball.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
So you
unfortunately I can't play that one, because if I do an ACL, that would be the end of me. But no, I'm a massive fan of the NBA and love watching basketball and all things basketball related as well in my spare time when I'm not involved in cricket. So yeah, that's definitely my number two.
Yeah.
And then golf at three.
Nice.
Would the Shield win be number one on favourite wins of all time?
Oh, that's tough. I mean, in terms of what it actually meant and winning the Shield itself, yes. But if you take context out of it, my favourite win in my career would probably be my third game for Queensland down at the MCG against Victoria, where we trailed by 120 at the end of the first innings and then managed to bowl Victoria out for 130 on the final day. Swepo got a hat-trick in the first innings and then ran through the tail in the second innings again. I think he got 8 or 9 for the match. And, yeah, we dismissed him with about 2 overs left in the day to turn around what was a miraculous comeback. And, I mean, it was only my third game, but that was a lot of the boys' first wins at the MCG in a long time. Yeah. So, yeah, that was a special moment for me to be a part of as well, and a great game of cricket in general.
Yeah, absolutely. Those come from behind. Yeah, absolutely ripper stuff. It would be remiss of us not to touch on the Shield final a little bit more. I mean, I don't know how much time you've got, but just out of interest, when you made 46 in that Shield final, and, you know, obviously Marnus scored 193, something like that from memory. What was your recollections of actually batting with Marnus? Because that 127 run stand, that really put New South Wales sort of out of the game and really asserted yourself into the game.
Yeah, I mean, my recollections of that were me struggling to hit the ball off the square and what was kind of a weird wicket against a well-cast bowling attack, where I'm proceeding to watch the guy at the other end take them at 4, 5s, and 6s and over it absolutely free will. And I'm sitting there going, like, am I actually this bad? Or is he good? So, no, I mean, I guess to have a front row seat for about 80-something of those runs and then to watch the rest of them from the sideline was absolutely special. I think to this day it's probably still one of the best innings I've ever seen in Shield cricket. No. And the attack that he did it against was something else as well. But, yeah, I guess it was special to bat with him through that. And he's like, yeah, mate, just keep finding a way. Meanwhile, he's pacing him for 4 and reverse flipping Nathan Lyon through all kinds of gaps. And I'm like, yeah, okay, you're doing a great job down there. So, yeah, it was something else to be a part of and be involved in. And I guess the partnership that we put on, which was about, what was it, 140, 150? Yeah, that's a moment I'll savour. That'll be a solid memory for the rest of my career.
Well, Rice, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on, mate, and we can only hope that very soon we'll see you opening the batting for Australia.
Thank you very much, guys. Thanks for having me.